Welcome to episode 6 of the Groups Matter podcast show. It's great to be with you again. As always, I am here with Rick Howerton.
Can you believe this is the 6th episode already? It doesn't seem possible. Okay, but over and above that.
It's June. It's summertime.
That's true. More importantly than that, though, I understand you've booked a trip to Disney World with your wife and your two daughters who are both almost college age.
Yeah.
What's it like to go to Disney World with adult kids?
I am guilty. That's something, you know, we were talking about going away, and the summertime just gets real busy. I mean, if you'd have told me 10 years ago life gets busier as your family matures, I'd have just, you would have zero credibility. But I'm here to tell you, living testimony, that it is true. And so just to match up all, you know, our vacations with Ashton are numbered. She's 21.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're trying to coordinate the breaks, and we got a deal to go to Disney World. It is a guilty pleasure. You know, I write for their blog. I write for – I contribute to Walt Disney World News Today sometimes. So
I didn't know that.
And what I like about it is you can just – you can get away from – it's one of the few – I don't know about – I suspect you're the same way, that it is very difficult to unplug for refreshment.
Yes. It's true. I think most people struggle that way.
So this kind of vacation where you can just park the car and everything's taken care of is hard to turn down.
Okay, so I got to ask you, do the girls hang with you or do they go off on their own? Or
you know, it's crazy. We give them the opportunity to hang with us, I mean, to go on and do their own thing, but they would rather be with us. So I'll take it as a compliment and move on.
That's what I call raising great kids right there, man.
Well, I appreciate that. Look, we have a great show. All shows are great.
Yeah.
Right? They're all. We're proud of all that we do. But, you know, this episode 6, again, we will have tweets of the week. We're going to do the blog of the week. And this week, we're looking at a post from Bob Mayfield.
That's right. Bob Mayfield is the director of Sunday School for the Oklahoma Baptist Convention. And he's one of the most sought-after guys in that space. So I'm really excited to share some information from his blog.
I have. I've met Bob and love him. He's a good thinker.
And he's a great guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's been out there in Oklahoma for a long time. I understand that. And in various roles, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll be looking at a post that Bob has brought us, and we're also excited to have David Francis. We talked a little bit about that last week on episode 5. So Dave is going to be with us. Really pumped about that.
Yeah, well, you can't beat a David Francis when it comes to Sunday school and groups. I mean, he's the premier voice in that space. So we're just honored to have him.
And as always, we will have the tweets of the week, one of our favorite segments. And then lastly, we'll be looking at Rick's list. So what's Rick's list this week?
Actually, I want to pick up where we left off last week. Last week, we talked about the difference between managing a ministry and leading a movement. This week, I want to give some specific characteristics of people who are leading movements. So if you want to be a movement leader, rather than just a person who gets the job done, this is the one for you.
So real good show. We're excited about all of you guys being here. And again, Groups Matter is a show from group people or by group people for group people. Whether you're a leader, a member, an education leader at your church, wherever it is, our hope is that we can develop and craft content and interviews that can help you in your role as a disciple maker. So real excited about episode 6, which is no different in that regard from the other episodes we'll do. So thanks for being with us. All right, so Rick, let's move on to the post of the week.
Yeah,
let's see what Bob's got to say.
I'm very excited about Bob Mayfield's post because Bob is another leading voice in the Sunday school space, as he is the director of Sunday school for the Oklahoma Baptist Convention, and just a very well-loved guy, but a very, very knowledgeable guy too. And I chose one of his posts that's simply called 5 Things for a Group Leader to Keep in Mind. And boy, these 5 things are astoundingly important. I just want to run through them real quick. The first one is this: don't be a lone ranger. And he doesn't mean that you're to not function on your own, to delegate responsibilities. He says something that I think so often we forget, and I just read a sentence from this blog. When your church or your pastor has a plan or something to implement, get behind the plan and champion it to your group. This is vital and essential to a church, because the church leadership sees the big picture of what they're trying to accomplish. And when a group leader or a Sunday school teacher pushes back or isn't willing to go on the same page, they're trying to move in a direction that the church may not be trying to move in. So this is just a very important thing to keep in mind. The second thing is,
and Rick, categorically, this is identifying, I think, something that's a difficult tension to manage as well, because there's a fine line between leadership and being the functional member of the body, I think, at times. Remember, Sam last week talked about learning styles, and we tend to default to our own learning style. I think this gets to that. But if you're going to err on any side, you err on the side of community and getting behind what the church and what the pastor has said is our direction. That Lone Ranger can be destructive.
Well, precisely. And I think what we sometimes miss, if we're not thinking about it, is that everyone in the church is under the authority of someone. So the pastor elders, if you have equal elder system, if it's your pastor and deacons, they're all under the authority of God. Scripture says that a pastor will someday answer to God for the ministry that they did. And then the staff are all under the authority of the pastor. Yeah. And the personnel committee, maybe whomever, the elders, and God. And then you get to the next level, if it's a Sunday school ministry or a small group ministry, there's an education minister or a small group pastor who oversees them. And it could just go right on down the flow chart. But we want to keep in mind that when an individual decides that the priesthood of the believer means I respond to no one and no one's an authority over me, then there's chaos in the church, and oftentimes there's disunity that hurts the reputation of God's people. So we just want to keep that in mind.
And we've seen it happen. And it requires a great deal of effort, I think.
All too often. Now, the second thing Bob says when it comes to keeping the right things in mind is to pray for your group members. And he suggests something that is fantastic. It's so simplistic, but I think we miss it. Grab a journal and write those requests in it. And then pick a day of the week that you're going to pray over those requests again, not just for the first time, but make sure you set aside some special time on that given day, just making sure you're praying consistently for those people.
Intention, intention, intention.
It's all about intentionality, yeah. Isn't it? We have to be.
And I think that bleeds over. We've talked about it in a prior episode, but that bleeds over into your conversations with the people in your group. You need to really listen. Listen for the prayer request that's implicit in any casual conversation, because it's there. If you're paying attention, the prayer is there. The prayer need is there.
You're right, Brian. And sometimes you hear an insinuation, and the group leader or the Sunday school teacher needs to pull that prayer request out. What's really going on? What do you really want us to pray for?
Okay, five things for a group leader to keep in mind. What's next?
Number three is, it is not about the size of your group. I love this.
Well, then what is it about?
It is about making disciples. Bob says this so specifically. So, because it is so often, especially in church life, in denominations where we talk a lot about numbers. A Sunday school teacher or a small group leader can begin to think, how big can my group get? They even begin sometimes to build a sense of identity around that. When our identity is in Christ and doing what Jesus called us primarily to do, and he said, go and make disciples. He never said, go and gather church members. He never said, go grow a big class. He said, go and make disciples. And Bob just nails it here for sure. The fourth thing is, be reproducible. And what he says is, do things that are reproducible. So if you're a teacher or a small group leader, do things others could do. Make sure that multiplication becomes a primary responsibility of yours personally.
So, for example, what fits into this category?
Oh, yeah. I think sometimes we tend to want to do our ministry kind of in a vacuum, mm-hmm. and no one be around to see it happen. Every group should have someone who is in training. And so I am doing things that anyone is capable of doing, so that, and they can be with me as I'm doing it, so that they can then do it with the group that they someday lead. I think it's just essential that we keep those things in mind.
Does apprenticeship enter the conversation here?
Oh, certainly. And some people use the term apprentice. Some will use the term associate. Some will use the term, there are various terms. But yes, bottom line is, we're preparing someone else to do what we are presently doing, and people do what they have seen done, not what they've been told they're supposed to do.
Yeah. And I love this next one. I think this is the culminating moment here.
Yeah. Why don't you jump in and cover that puppy?
Well, create opportunities for all of these things. I think that's beholden to a group leader, and something that a group leader definitely needs to keep in mind. And this comes with environment. This comes with apprenticeship. This comes in your prayer life. You invite other people into your responsibilities.
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing we were just discussing. Giving people an opportunity to be with you as you go, so that they will someday go and take someone with them as they go.
Make the ask. People, I think we forget, I know I do, so speaking from their heart here, I forget that people want to pitch in. So make the ask. Don't be afraid to make the ask. And sometimes this Lone Ranger and Create Opportunities work in tandem in a not so healthy way, I would say.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
Because sometimes the Lone Ranger is a natural process that really comes. It's maybe almost well-intentioned because I don't want to bother somebody else. I've accepted this role, so I'm going to do it. There's accountability. There's some really good things rolled up into Lone Rangerness that we just really need to guard against. And I think coaches and group leaders and directors need to be mindful of this as well.
For sure. And if anybody wants to follow, and I would suggest you subscribe to Bob's blog, it's bobmayfield.com.
Yeah, and Bob is someone that you're going to want to follow on Twitter and read his blog. I've followed him for several years, and he's always got good insights. And speaking of Bob Mayfield, I would assume that our next guest and Bob have some kind of relationship. They've certainly been in ministry for long enough.
For sure, and they've been in the same spaces for a long time, influencing many people together.
So the Groups Matter podcast show welcomes David Francis. As promised, we are here with David Francis. David is the director of Sunday School here at Lifeway still, and he has held many roles. 30 years in discipleship and equally that much as disciple maker. He's probably one of the most well or highly regarded voices in Sunday school today, I would say. And I know, David, you and I met when we moved here from New Mexico in 2001. Do you remember we were in Dinner 8 together?
Yeah, at Long Hollow Baptist Church. That was a tremendous deal.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think that we did that twice, and it's like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that anymore. But
yeah,
but
us too. But you know, we got to meet some cool people like you and Karen and others.
It's really good. It was a great ministry.
What is Dinner 8? This sounds like something maybe some church may want to start. What is Dinner 8?
I think it was fairly popular about that time, and it is four couples getting together for dinner once a month, and it rotates between the four houses. And I don't know how it was set up. I mean, we were just invited and we joined, but I suspect that it was intended to get outside of your channels and to meet some new people, which was great for it.
And I think Long Hollow was growing really rapidly at the time, and so people weren't connecting as rapidly as you'd hope they would, and so this was just a device to get people together that wouldn't have otherwise gotten together and establish some relationships.
Well, that's a great idea. Well, let's climb into a conversation with David because we really want to get into that for sure. David, I'm so thrilled you're here because David has become a good friend of mine, a mentor in many ways. I've asked you many questions about ministry and Lifeway and church and just a real good friend. But now what you may not know is that David has done a lot of writing. One of his books, it's actually a guide to help a group or a church realize their spiritual gifts. It's called Spiritual Gifts, A Practical Guide to How God Works Through You, has sold 40,000 copies. David, you've got to be pleased with that.
I am. And it's helped a lot of people, and it's always great to see something continue as long as it has.
Oh, yeah, and David has also written what a lot of people call the Francine Epistles. Again, it's David Francis, so that's where the Francine Epistles. He's written 12 books that are amazing. They're created for someone to simply read a chapter, a few pages, then come back the next week and discuss them with the person that's training them. And if you don't know what they are, go to lifeway.com. Just simply search the name David Francis, and I think that will bring you to the list, if I'm not mistaken. So you want to check those out. David, we don't want to take too much time so we can get to some meat, because I know you're going to give us some great stuff. I got a quick question for you. What are some trends that you're seeing in the adult Sunday school world? I know it's changing and evolving and still accomplishing its core goals. So what are some things you're seeing?
You know, one of the things I'm glad to see, you would be too, is Sunday school ministries, whatever they're called, rediscovering small groups. I think I talked to you about a book that was given to me in Southwest Arkansas by a 90-year-old minister of education named Maurice Hodges. And he's sent me a lot of information about different things he's thinking about. He sent me this book. It was written at the end of a prior decade, evaluating the previous decade. It was called Trends in Protestant Adult Education, written by a Presbyterian, published under the Methodist Publishing House imprint. And a couple of the things that were noted in the book in these trends in this previous decade were that class was out, is in terms of terms, and group was in, teacher was out, and leader was in. It was written in 1969, evaluating the decade of the 60s.
It's amazing.
And so it also noted that it takes most trends, churches 50 years to start executing a trend, so we're right on schedule. And so the return of small groups after some experimentation with adult Bible fellowships and larger groups is an exciting trend that I'm glad is returning.
That's fantastic. Yeah. When you shared that story before, it just astounded me when you walked in my office and shared that with me.
Yeah.
So that was 69, you said.
Yeah, 1969, evaluating the 60s. And one of the other things that the book noted is that various denominations were experimenting with more gospel-centered curriculum.
In the 60s,
yeah.
And that's exactly where we're landing right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's fun. But it's the last book that I've written is the best one because you co-authored the book. It's called Countdown, and we count down some different things. And one of the chapters that I like the most is the next to last chapter, chapter two, which talks about the two words you and I agree on, Rick, that we think are going to determine group destiny in churches in the future years, and it's new and small.
Yes.
You know, new groups, right. Small groups, and to see that trend begin to penetrate the Sunday school movement is an exciting thing to see.
That's thrilling, David.
All right, David, so how many churches are you in any given 12-month period, if you had to guess?
Actually, in the churches doing consultation or speaking in church, probably about 12 or so, but also do a lot of conference speaking and stuff like that, so get to interact with people from a whole lot more churches than that, so hundreds.
Yeah, you're constantly in conversations with pastors and leaders in this community.
Yeah, and I'm probably too accessible to people. I just had an email exchange this morning with a pastor who's talking about we need to add small groups to our existing on-campus Sunday school ministry. Can you help us do that? And so try to help churches, and plus to stay connected to what's happening in the real church. You know, it's easy to sit in the Baptist Vatican or across the street from the Baptist Vatican at Lifeway and think you know everything. The reality is that doing the work on the ground in a local church with all of its dynamics sometimes blows our theories, doesn't it, Rick?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, so I bet your inbox stays pretty fluid, I guess you would say, as well. All right, so given that, what's the most interesting thing you've seen or heard of someone doing that is reshaping what the church's Sunday school ministry is looking like?
Well, just recently I was leading some leadership training at Spotswood Baptist Church, which is in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Dan Cook is the minister of education, been there about 20 years, well-loved, well-respected. And they are launching more off-campus small groups in addition to their adult Bible fellowships on Sunday morning. But the trend I think is very healthy is that all of these people were in the same room being trained regardless of whether they were in an on-campus Sunday morning ministry or an off-campus weekday ministry. And essentially the principles they've established, they want to pervade all of these ministries, the goals, the purposes, so that they can tell their folks after you've come to worship, the next step in our discipleship process is to get involved in a small group. You can either do that in a Sunday school class on Sunday mornings or on during the week at various times. In a small group. Don't do both. Do one or the other because they're the same thing. They're just in different occasions in different locations.
David, that's fantastic. I mean, that's something you and I have been talking about for a long time.
Yeah.
And somebody's finally doing it.
Yeah. And probably others. There's seldom one example is seldom isolated. It's usually indicative of a trend or an idea that God's given to some people. And I don't think God gives any individual alone one idea. If he gives an idea, the Sunday school movement started that way. God didn't give one person the idea about Sunday school. He gave a lot of people the idea about Sunday school, and many of them obeyed it, and then it became a movement.
That's fantastic. Okay, David, I know you don't like it when I say this, but I have searched my mind again and again and again when you've given me that look and we've been conferencing together, and I say David is the most well-known and well-versed guy in the Sunday school in the world today when it comes to Sunday school. I know you don't like it when I say that, but I've asked myself again and again and again, well, who else would it be?
Who else?
And I still think it's you.
Well, there's Elmer Towns and Leon Kilbreth and many others who probably deserve the term name Mr. Sunday School more than I do. But just to even be in the league with those guys is humbling and gratifying, I guess. But Well, I guess I still am uncomfortable saying that. Maybe you're right. I hope you are.
Well, I think in today's era, you're not only in the league, you're on the team, and you're the cleanup batter.
Okay.
So I'm thrilled to have you here. That's just astounding that you're here answering some of these questions. And we got one more question for you, and this gets real practical. You've probably trained more Sunday school teachers and more education ministers than anybody that we know of. I just wondered if you'd look at each of those roles, and if you were going to give each of those roles three things they need to think about or three things they need to do, what would you tell them?
I think they would be the same for both audiences. And it probably sounds boring, but this is the work. I tell ministers of education when they come in for conferences, your work is really around these three things: enlist, equip, and encourage. It's just the work. They'll say, well, what else do I do? Say, no, not much, because what you do most of the time is enlist people to work and lead your organization. You equip them so they know what they're doing, and you encourage them so they don't quit. And so that's really the same thing for a small group leader, Sunday school class leader, ABF leader, Connect group leader. They can't do everything themselves, so they must enlist a team to help them to accomplish all the purposes of the group. Then they need to equip them or make sure they have opportunities to be equipped. That's where the little books come in handy, so that they can do the job and do it well and do it in a fulfilling way and be energized by it and feel good about it and feel like God's using them in that role. But everybody gets discouraged, and so you need to encourage people so that they will keep on doing it, keep plugging away, keep doing their work, keep finding that joy that only comes from doing what God wants you to do and His beings going through you in the work that you're doing, and so that you don't quit. And so that's kind of the work of discipleship, of a leader of discipleship: enlist, equip, encourage.
I just want to say what you referred to as the Francine epistles. Those books are gold. There's 12 of them. They are easy to read, practical, hands-on, and really insightful. And they are built on all these years of experience, but not just experience in the local church. I mean, David's got experience in the local church as a disciple maker, as a leader at Lifeway, as a consultant. He's in these conversations. There's just no substitute for that. And his willingness to share through these books, I would encourage everyone. Rick's already given you guys the website.
Well, Brian, I think we want to tell everyone this also. If I'm not mistaken, David, they can get those free as PDF downloads. Is that correct?
You can get them free as a PDF download. The PDF download's in a zip file. It also includes training plans, PowerPoint presentations, and stuff like that. Or if you have the Lifeway Reader, you can download it in that format. Or they're also free at the iTunes store. If you just search on iTunes, David Francis, it'll pull that up. So I've got them all on my iPhone right now in case somebody questions me about something. I can refer to it. And so, yeah, we want them to be free. We want them to be widely accessible. You can reproduce them, use them any way you want to.
Excellent. Thank you.
And on that note, a little bit about what's next.
What's next is we've done a lot on organization and outreach and those kind of things. And so this next year we're going to focus on how to lead, teach, lead a conversation in a group or a class, and for all age groups, preschool children, students, and adults, what are the very basic things that you do? And in my mind is a little grid of unfortunately the acrostic is SAD, so it'd be like SAD Bible study, so I'll probably have to change that so it may not turn out that way. But basically is a little grid, if you can imagine, scripture down one side and then three columns that say, what am I going to say? What am I going to ask? What are we going to do? And so that's kind of the framework. I've not written one word of it. That diagram is just scribbled on the window of my office. And so if it doesn't turn out that way, apologies. But, you know, just the very basics about how do you prepare yourself to lead a small group? And then how do you go about the dynamics of what actually happens in the small group or Sunday school class experience?
That's exciting.
Yeah, and it'll be great and very helpful. That's what we know, whatever it is. Well, thanks, David, for being with us on the Groups Matter podcast show. And you going to be willing to come back?
Absolutely.
Good to have you. David Francis, ladies and gentlemen.
Special time. You're talking to the man who knows it best. But what we don't realize about David is he goes far beyond just Sunday school and small groups. He knows church. And so when you talk with someone like him, you get perspectives that go much broader, which is so helpful to all of us.
Yeah, the experience that he brings is truly unique to church, you know, just the way churches work in discipleship. It's really amazing over the course of the years, just the experiences that he has. That's not to mention how often he's in churches. So encourage everybody to look at these, to take a look at the books that we mentioned. I think David gave the website. I don't have it in front of me. And you can follow him on Twitter at David Francis. So you can pick that up. I'm sure he'd appreciate it, and you can keep posted on where he is and what he's doing. But he is a special leader at Lifeway, and it's an honor to have him on the show today.
Well, and Brian, I think the thing to keep in mind about David's work is it's practical. Every time I've seen him do a conference, everything you read that he writes, you can put something in practice that next week in your church. And so that's what people are needing.
Anything surprise you about what he said?
No surprises, but I take that back, actually. I was surprised and thrilled that we're hearing churches doing what David's been talking about for a long time, that you are a group and you are biblical, and if you are that, then these are the practices of those groups, and promoting the importance of doing Sunday school and small groups side by side, but bringing them together under one biblical arch, I think is just incredible.
Yeah, and David was one of the earliest advocates that I ran into about integrating the best of small group practices into the Sunday school environment as well. I mean, that's something today that a lot more people talk about and recognize and value. But in the earliest conversations I had, he was one of the first. I would say that he was a pioneer in that conversation.
A pioneer, and probably took some shots because of his passion for that.
Well, I'm sure we'll have David back on the show, so we'll be looking forward to that. All right, Rick, it's time for everyone's favorite segment, Tweets of the Week.
I love it.
I know you do. What you got?
Oh, well, get Jade Smith. Well, actually, at Mrs. Ryan Smith, tweeted this. What happens in a fourth grade small group is just as important as what happens in big church. I love that, because I think sometimes we forget that small group is not just for adults. There are some fabulous small groups for children, and they're making a huge difference. And sometimes kids don't get what's going on in big church, but when I can get them in a small group and nurture them on an ongoing basis, man, that's just fantastic.
And I think it applies doubly so for students and teens.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, even if it's not every week, every other week, whatever that meeting is, to get in a more casual setting outside of the church for group. All right, my next tweet, or my first tweet of the week, is Jenna Mazurek. This is at Jenna, JennaMazurek. And Jenna tweeted on May 12th, although I didn't want to hear it, I definitely heard what needed to be said tonight.
Man, that is powerful.
Hashtag small group, and get this, hashtag real talk.
That is powerful. And that's powerful because so often we have blind spots that we need a small group to tell us what and tell us what they are.
Yeah. I mean, so often you have blind spots that no one is willing to speak into, but everybody knows about.
Yes.
My goodness. I mean, we need to have people in our lives that do this, and group life is a place where that should happen. Now, how often does it? At least one of these places, Jenna experienced it, but I would hazard to guess a lot of people don't get that.
Well, Brian, it only happens when a group of people have said to one another, I give you permission to speak into my world. That's when it happens. The one I'd like to jump on next is at Josh Hunt NM, and he says this: I still believe that most people who are opposed to the gospel are not opposed to love. This is an outstanding tweet. It reminds us that when there are people who are unbelievers, and they may not be open to having deep conversations about Scripture, if you love them, they may someday be willing to have those conversations.
So is Josh saying, take your opportunity wherever you get it, and if love is your entry point, then that's where it is?
I think he might take it a step further than that, Brian. I think he might say that the primary responsibility of a believer is to love, and if you get a chance to speak the gospel, it will flow out of your relationship with that person. Your goal is not to teach them. Your goal is first to know them.
Next tweet of the week is from Philip McCart at MCCART. And Philip says, two best things about my new guitar. Number one, my hashtag small group bought it for me. How about that? Number two is the proceeds went to missions. What's the story there, you think?
I'm guessing that the church did a fundraiser maybe for missions. Somebody brought the guitar to the church to be in some kind of big sell-off, And the small group said, you know what? He's always wanted a guitar, or he needs a new guitar. We're going to show him what community is.
Maybe he's a talent. Maybe he's a part of the worship group, you know, at the church. Who knows? But there was a need that was identified, and the small group pitched in and took care of it or addressed that need.
Amazing stuff.
And this is not superfluous. This is a matter of just group life.
Fantastic, man. Just fantastic. Now, my next one comes from at More Shoreline, and it reads like this. Small group tonight, period. Romans 13 contains a word of hope to those who suffer and hate sin and death. That one captured me, Brian, because I just realize that when a group gets together, nothing brings more hope than the Word of God. So I can verbalize that I'm here for you, that if you have a need, I'm there for you. I can be a good listening ear. But when it comes right down to it, nothing is more powerful than God's Word in speaking hope to us.
And lastly, last tweet of the week for this week on episode 6 is Heath Hollinsworth at HHOLLANDSWORTH. Great night with great people. Love doing life with these guys. Hashtag small group. And there's that. We talked about this on episode 5, this idea about doing life together and how that manifests itself probably differently for a lot of different people. You described in the last episode what it meant to you. And so here is Heath Hollinsworth talking about doing life together.
Love it. That's fantastic.
A lot of that's rolled up into what you already said about giving permission to do life together.
That's wonderful.
All right, let's move on to the final segment here. This is Rick's List, and this is a segment on the show where, Rick, you give us a list of things that you have, either conclusions or things you've observed over the course of your work and what your understanding of group life. So this week is going to be a continuation of, what you started with, what you began in episode 5 about, movements.
Yeah, last week I compared, someone who's simply managing a ministry to someone who's leading a movement. I want this week to talk about, the characteristics of people who lead movements so that our listening audience can say, am I leading a movement or am I managing a ministry? The first thing would be this. Those who lead movements dream God-sized dreams. They don't dream little dreams. So, and those who dream God-sized dreams have no option but to lead a movement. So you think about Martin Luther King Jr. I have a dream. Boom. Next statement. I have a dream. Boom. Next statement. I have a dream. Boom. And these were amazingly big expectations for a culture to be transformed. He had no option but to lead a movement because his dream was so big. Just managing a ministry wouldn't have made those things a reality. So the first one would be dream God-sized dreams. The second one would be this. Those who lead movements accept being diagnosed as an eccentric egotist or a foolish fantasizer.
Wait a minute now. You're just meddling.
I am getting right in there, man, for sure. We have to remember that if we're going to lead a movement and we're going to make big assumptions about what we're going to accomplish, and if God gives you God-sized dreams, you're going to do that. People are sometimes going to look at you like, do you realize what you just said? Those who have never been impressed by God to dream a God-sized dream will probably not get it.
And stay on top of it.
And yeah, they've got to keep it.
You've got to sell out. You've got to sell out to that movement.
Keep it in your heart. Never let it run loose from you because it is what God told you to do. The third thing is this. Those who lead movements are fully aware that the size of the present dream will determine the size of the future reality. And that is, when I have a dream, it will never become a reality unless I truly believe in my heart that it will become one. I will never forget when I was on church staff, I was in charge of missions, and we were doing a partnership with a major city, and my pastor wanted to go and meet with the pastors in that area. He came back and called me to his office, and he said, Rick, these particular churches in this denomination were never going to accomplish much. And I said, how do you know that? And he said, because every pastor that I met with had one dream, to have 100 people in their church. That's as big as they could dream. Here's the important fact. The size of your dream will determine the size of your accomplishment. And the fourth thing is this. Those who lead movements go over, under, around, or through any obstacle that gets in their way. They will not be stopped. Bill Hybels, who was a visionary leader, a pastor of Willow Creek Community Church, who actually led a movement called the Willow Creek Association, once wrote these amazing words. Visionary people face the same problems everyone else faces, but rather than get paralyzed by their problems, visionaries immediately commit themselves to finding a solution. And that's what those who lead movements must do. The fifth thing those who lead movements do is they sacrifice much to see the dream they have become a reality. They will sacrifice whatever it takes. You know, and Paul talks about his responsibilities and what he sacrificed. We find some amazing words in 2 Corinthians 11. I won't read the whole passage, but just a few verses. 5 times I received 39 lashes from Jews. 3 times I was beaten with rods by the Romans. Once I was stoned by my enemies. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I have spent a night and a day in the open sea. On frequent journeys, I faced dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, and the list goes on and on and on. And then his letters to the church in Colossae, Paul tells us why he was willing to face these amazing hardships. And here's what he says. Now I rejoice in my sufferings for you, and I am completing in my flesh what is lacking in Christ's afflictions, for whom? For his body, that is the church. He was willing to suffer because he was suffering for a cause that was worth suffering for.
Yeah, we talked about last week, most people are only willing to suffer for their comfort. And so a movement's going to require a little more out of you, actually a lot more out of you.
Definitely. When you are called to lead a movement, and what I'm talking about here, Brian, I'm talking about church leaders who have a ministry area, a small group ministry or a Sunday school ministry. If they can change their mindset from managing a ministry to leading a movement, the vision gets bigger, the expectations become more intense, and the outcomes are more amazing. So when we can transfer our minds from simply managing a ministry, leading a movement, everything changes in our hearts.
Again, it comes down to what's driving you, why you're doing it, or the hows and the whats.
Yes. And the final point, those who lead movements will expect those who join the movement to sacrifice much also. They will say to those who are willing to join the movement, you have a high price to pay, but the rewards that God will give you someday are worth it. It's that moment when Jesus says to his disciples, if anyone wants to come with me, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. He's already told them that you must give up family sometimes. You must give up the comforts of home. Ultimately, you must be willing to die for me. He didn't say, I'm going to make it so comfortable for you that you'll stay and still hang around. Either you're in or you're out. And I don't think there's anything wrong with church leaders saying to people, I need more time from you.
And again, Rick, I think it's worth saying that by movement, you're covering a lot of ground there. I mean, you mentioned MLK. So MLK, that was definitely a movement, you know, for that decade, right? But movement is also something inside your church. So it's not necessarily this global national event. Could be. It could very well be. But this is about a mindset.
Precisely.
This is about you can't think in terms of programs and activities and events and singular things that might happen along the way. You have to think about this as a movement, something that would be like what MLK did within your own context.
And normally demands a lifetime to accomplish.
And you have to be willing to take your shots. Like you said, because they're going to come. I don't know what it is about our nature that makes us want to take shots at people. I mean, you see it in government officials. That's not an easy job.
Right.
And so I'm always reminding my family when things come up, it's like, yeah, but that person's made themselves a target. That in and of itself is worth respect. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of people that are willing to do that. And a lot of those people that are taking the shots are exactly the people that aren't willing to do that. And that's what it takes.
And Brian, let me describe a little bit what I'm saying. So my vision is to see a biblical small group within walking distance of every person on the planet making disciples that make disciples. What I've begun to say to church leaders, small group pastors, and Sunday school education ministers is, would you be willing to consider leading a movement, and the goal of that movement is to reach every person within a 10-mile radius of where your church gathers. If they begin to think in those kinds of goals and those kinds of ways, they will be forced to lead a movement, and it will bring their hearts to life. Man, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the chance to share this information, because this is a passion for me.
And a good one. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us on episode 6 of the Groups Matter podcast show. Thank you for being with us. We'd like to thank our sponsor, smallgroup.com. Without their sponsorship, we would not be, we'd be at least less able to do this, I would say. So check that out. That tool is a wonderful tool. We're using it at our church. And just to tell you a little bit about it, you can go to smallgroup.com and it will build a Bible study for you in a matter of
seconds, minutes
by text and or by topic. And what you get is an icebreaker, questions, and commentary that spits it out, and it's all customizable and editable in a PDF, and then you can send it out to the groups. It's a wonderful tool for alignment, wouldn't you agree?
Definitely.
A wonderful tool for a campaign, or, you know, if you've got group leaders that are, you know, they want to do their own stuff, but they're maybe struggling a little bit. It's very affordable, too,
that's
at
right.
least on a per-person basis. So check us out at groupsmatter.com, and thank you for being with us. I'd like to thank Rick and certainly our guest, David Francis, today.
It's been fun, Brian.
And we will see you next week for Episode 7, where we will welcome Eddie Mosley. What's Eddie going to talk to?
Eddie is going to talk to us about doing Sunday school and small groups in the same church.
Wow, no one's considering that, are they?
Everybody's talking about this.
So that's going to be great. So look forward to being with you.